What's up? It's your boys, Jordan and Abraham. He's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend. I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. Most importantly, though, we are your friends who read One Piece. Before we get into everything today, I want to give a quick shout out to our Twitter at FWROP Pod. Please give us a follow. We're always posting funny shit that we see. It's just we want to engage with you guys. So, help us do that.
Yeah,
Also,
man.
we've got our YouTube at channel is just Friends Who Read One Piece. Post funny shorts there all the time. Again, we just want to be engaging with all of you guys who take the time out of your day to listen to us. So please
And
help us
Abraham,
engage more.
people are listening to us. It's more than just our friends now. I mean, it is all of our friends because everyone who, we are your friends who read One Piece. So everyone is our friends. But it's crazy. We're at, right as we record this, we're at 38 listens in a week. I don't have 38 friends who read One Piece. So that means people are actually checking us out in that very last episode, almost getting to 40 in 1 week. We'll see. We might make it there. But we're pretty proud. It's
Nice.
pretty cool. We appreciate having people who actually
I'm
sit
pretty
here, sit down and listen to us every week.
yeah, I'm pretty proud of what we've done. Okay. We don't have a chapter this week, unfortunately. This kind of feels like the theme lately. Every second week is a break week. But Jordan, you've had a couple things on your mind over these past couple weeks. So why don't you let me know, some of the things that you've been thinking of.
Yeah, man. So, I would say I have really one major question that came up for me in last week's chapter. As I've been mentioning, as we have gone through Vegapunk's reveal, one thing that seems really notable to me is that Vegapunk doesn't seem to want to pass judgment on the him who caused the world government's earthquake, which we know as readers was Im erasing Lucia Kingdom. To this point, the world government has seemed completely evil. There's been talk of a cleansing, the elder stars, elder planets turn into like evil spiders and like, horse demons and like skeleton birds. But we also know there's many people in the world, see the Marines and the world government as a force for good. So to me, it's really interesting imagining. What do you think they're trying to accomplish? And do you think it's as evil as maybe we've been led to believe?
Yeah, I've so there's a lot of ambiguity with who the him that Vegapunk is referring to, right? Because it's been a while since I read that chapter, but I thought the him was referring to like the person who killed him, which in some way could be like Kizaru or something like that. I think the most likely answer is Imu, like you were saying, but
Right.
we don't actually know that for sure. Vegapunk also, from like the preamble to his speech about the Void Century, appears to just want to give people the facts and let them come to their own conclusions, right?
Right.
So even like it's kind of like how Roger and Raylick said, you might come to a different conclusion at the end of your journey. I don't think that that necessarily means that the world government is not evil. I think it just means that that Vegapunk does not want to, I guess, bias anyone in any particular way, right? He's just like, hey, I'm going to give you guys this information and you guys come to whatever conclusion you want to about what's going on. So for me, I think the world government is pretty clearly being set up to be some kind of evil organization. I don't think there's going to be any kind of moral ambiguity about their objectives and whatnot. It's just like you
But
hear about like,
let's say that Vegapunk came, let's say that the reveal Vegapunk was going to make about the world government was going to be that they are going to murder every single person on the planet who with red hair. To me, it wouldn't be the sort of thing that would be revealed with a sense of, oh, it's not my place to judge right and wrong, or I don't understand him enough to actually pass judgment on that. To me, the implication of him, like, I agree that what he wants to do is leave it up to people for their own conclusions. But don't you think, at the very least, that there has to be some sort of, there has to be some sort of possibility for someone to be able to take, hear that truth and say, actually, that kind of makes sense. Like, actually, like, there has to be some reason that someone might hear it and say, you know,
Yeah.
maybe I th that isn't the worst thing in the world. Maybe I support that, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like, did you ever watch Gurren Lagann or whatever?
I did years ago, so I can't say I remember it that well, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But
I'm intrigued.
you remember how they were like, you know, constantly killing people and forcing them to live under the ground, and it was
Right,
discovered
right,
that it was
right.
like, at the end of the day, it was like, if the population ever reached a certain level, that like the planet would be destroyed kind of thing.
Right,
So
yeah,
yeah.
exactly, right.
Like those details might be a little, but I get that. Like that's essentially what you're saying, right? Where it's just like something that looks very blatantly evil on the surface may actually have like good intentions. I just really don't think Oda is writing these characters. Like it's like we have this whole idea of genocide and, like you said, all of these evil creatures, right? And then also, you know, we talked last week about how Oda has a lot of morally ambiguous villains, but the two that I think are the most evil that we kind of agreed on were like NL and Dofi, right? And I feel like those are the
Right.
strongest parallels to Emu himself. So I agree that there's definitely a possibility that there's that the world government just doesn't end up being some black and white evil organization. It just doesn't feel to me like that's the road Oda's going down.
But so what is it that, you know, man, like I have so many directions, like questions that I like want to, like parallels that I want to bring up that I find really interesting for this, right? Like I really like that you brought up Gurren Lagann as an example. Oh, that was obviously sort of, I believe that was like a mid-plot kind of issue, right?
Yeah,
Like before
it
they
wasn't the
eventually
final
go and take
villain.
on the
Yeah.
Spiral King. Yeah, exactly. You know, I'll come back to like asking exactly, well, it's related, right? Because again, like what I really want to say is like, then what do you think it is that they're trying to do? Because what I could see it being is that they have some kind of objective that is not necessarily good, that's not necessarily the best for everyone. Obviously, things like hunting people on God Valley, et cetera, are all really, really terrible. But so let's say you take one, you know, another amazing series, Full Metal Alchemist, right? And obviously, people like the homunculi are made out to be largely evil characters. But you do, on one hand, also get to see, I mean, that's the homunculi, honestly, kind of like a good parallel for like Im and the Elder Stars, Elder Planets. But you know, if you take the homunculi, you realize that one, they do have some amount of familial care for each other. And so there's like some amount of humanity for them that makes, I mean, that's the whole theme of the series, whether they have humanity or not, right? So I should, you know, I'm getting into buckets there, but you have some amount of being able to understand them and like understand the human characteristics that they have, whether it's, you know, gluttony's affection towards lust, right? Whether it's someone like envy just being envious of what it is that allows humans to, no matter how many times you get knocked down, keep getting back up. And at the core of it is this character, like the original homunculus, who was a little dwarf in a flask, who just like was doing the entire thing. He was basically creating a giant philosopher's stone that was going to sacrifice the entire people of Amestris, so he could, yes, like swallow God, but at his core, he really just wanted to get out of that freaking flask that he had been in for so long. And sure, I would say very obviously sacrificing like an entire country of human lives, that is bad. That, you know, that is not like, I don't think that's like necessarily written to be like morally ambiguous, but it is written to be something that is a character motivation that you can understand. And that's why I kind of wonder if there's some, like, when we hear what the Elder Stars in like world government, et cetera, is trying to accomplish, oh, is it going to be something that we're able to say, you know, I actually kind of understand that.
I think that's a possibility. I just, if you were asking me what I believe will happen, I don't think that there are going to be some kind of reasonable, and maybe that's not as like maybe that's simple writing, and maybe that won't be as enjoyable of a story. But it's just
Wait, like,
thematically, it I can't, I it's like trying to imagine a world where, like, it's like me trying to imagine Tobirama working alongside with like the Uchihas or something like that. Like, I'm just like, these guys hate each other. There's no way they're ever gonna work alongside. You know what? So I just
Well, who's these guys, first of all? Who's these guys?
Sorry, I was talking about Tobirama and the Uchihas there, but I
Yeah,
guess
but who
I'm
would be
more.
these guys in this situation, right?
Yeah, it would have to be the, I guess, the D's and the 20 Kings, something like that, right?
But so let's
So,
like
go
I
ahead.
just can't I actually had been looking for I've been I couldn't think of like an example of what this would be this whole week when I was trying to think of it because I knew I wanted to talk about this at some point. I've been thinking about this since we talked about it in the last podcast, and I was like, man, what could it be? Just on my own time. And I finally came up with something as we were talking right now. Like, what if there was some kind of, right? You got people who lived atop the Red Line, you have people who lived in Marajoa or whatever. And what if at some point there was some kind of like really terrible natural disaster, some kind of like flood cleanse, like I don't know, right? And like that killed a lot of those people. And the thing, and they ended up finding some kind of source of energy to actually, allow them to create a society that was able to float beyond that. Maybe that was by, maybe they were able to do that by like digging a giant hole in the ground. And maybe that's Enies Lobby, I love Enies Lobby, and raise sea level, and like somehow that allowed them to do something that saved their society and the people that they care about. And similar to, similar to Attack on Titan, similar to like, again, the making of Philosopher's Stone, you need some kind of massive source of energy that requires a massive sacrifice of life periodically. And so what they're trying to do in this case is create that massive sacrifice of life in order to, save the people that they care about and they love. And their society.
I mean, that would be that. That could be a compelling storyline, right? I just think, Oda would have to. I would like to see him put some work into maybe not painting his characters in the like. It's kind of like the complaint people had about Game of Thrones at the end of it, right? Where people were like, all of a sudden there was like no character development. Daenerys just became crazy and, burnt everyone down and blah. Like,
I have
if
no
that's like,
idea what I know nothing about Game
but
of Thrones.
it's kind of like, if that's the route Oda wants to take, I would hope that there are, between now and when that reveal happens, that there are maybe some, Easter eggs that he throws in there to be like, hey, maybe this is, everything is not always what it seems, kind of like you're saying about Vegapunk maybe not passing judgment. Even the Roger Ray or the Rayleigh thing at Sabaody to some degree, right? But I'd like a little bit more stuff like that if
I
that's the
think we
case.
have I think we have enough of that, right? Like we have a lot of Easter eggs about there being past societies. We have Easter eggs about there being an ancient kingdom. We have Easter eggs about people who used to live on the Red Line. There's even like random things like why do these celestial dragons like run around with bubbles on their head all the time? And I think that as we get an explanation for those kinds of things, that could explain for us what this ancient society or like the old society that people used to care about that the Elder Stars might be trying to protect and preserve we can get some kind of answer. As we get answers for that, those could be answers that really actually humanize the people that we've to this point looked at as evil and make them sort of like reluctant leaders, reluctant kings, reluctant evil figures that had to sacrifice all this life in order to protect the people close to them.
I think if
like
there
think
was
about like Attack on Titan real quick, right? Like,
yeah.
you know, it's through the beginning of the series, you just like see the Titans as these completely evil. They're really bad. There's not even like a million, you don't need like a million Easter eggs, but you eventually, it's almost like as soon as you learn something about, like, again, nature of the world, right? Just to keep talking about that, it turns out that the nature of their world was that we had just accepted as true, as you have these like giant man-eating monsters. It turned out that the explanation for the nature of their world was a lot of people with who from their lineage were being, you know, turned into Titans and pushed off a cliff as prisoners from a different society, right? And so something that we previously just saw as totally evil came to become something that was much more understandable.
I think you're I'll take your Attack on Titan analogy and go a little bit somewhere a little different with it, because I think there are two ways I can see Oda kind of rationalizing the world government's actions. One is that we eventually learned in Attack on Titan that the people of Paradise Island, right, the reason why they were constantly being attacked, why they were called like the demons of the world and all of that other stuff, was because there was a long history of that civil the Eldians, I think they're the Eldians, killing and enslaving and, you know, doing horrible, horrible things to the Marlians for, you know, thousands of years, right? Or however long it was, right? And then eventually at some point the tables turned. And the Marlians were on top, and they were like, "Well, we're gonna keep you guys suppressed, so that you know." So maybe like the like Oda decides to go in that kind of route where the ancient kingdom was this all-powerful kingdom, and they were you know, suppressing the 20 kings and whatever. I could see the
Oh,
Eldians.
I love that. Honestly, yeah, I love that. I think that would be a really interesting, you know, it turns out that the ancient kingdom was an empire and they were a bunch of, you know, Joy Boy was a colonizer, you know. I mean, probably probably
There are
not true,
issues
but
that I think that I see that are with that idea, but like that is one route I could see Oda going down. The other route is
well, I
this
want to
is
say really quick,
really
because one thing I love about that idea too is it would give us an explanation for why the world government seems to be so afraid of the advancement of technology. You said that this technology created some kind of conflict that the ancient kingdom had, and we had to do away with that because it ended up being the source of so much evil.
No, it's like I said, it's one of the one it's one explanation that I think Oda could reasonably give for the world government's actions. The other is I can't remember, because this was like over 5 years. This is before I moved to St. Louis. I remember watching a video that someone put out. I think it was Marco the Theorist, I could be wrong, where he was basically saying how the world government provides a necessary evil, because if the order that they created didn't exist, that the world would fall into like chaos run by pirates. Basically, it's just like, sure, the world government is bad, but imagine if you just had a bunch of like Beehive Islands and Blackbeards running around and terrorizing people, right? And so maybe this is this evil and oppression that they provide wouldn't necessarily be even be evil at that point, but like that this oppression that they provide is some kind of necessary deed to be done in order to, you know, protect the citizens from this rampant chaos. So those are two ways I could see Oda going down, but
And one thing I really, you know, the one thing that that brings up for me is, you know, when you start talking about things like erasing Lelouchia Kingdom, right? That seems like on its face, right? You talk about the Marco the Theorist idea, right? It's that the order it provides. Like, it almost seems like if you found out that the world government was just like randomly, you know, oh, I think this place never existed, and now it's a giant hole in the ocean. I think if you found out about that, that really seems like it would be hard to actually to come to any kind of conclusion other than that is really bad. Like, thank you, world government, for stopping the rest of us from being a bunch of beehive islands, but actually, like, just like erasing this kingdom and now everyone here is just like dead and it's a giant hole in the ocean, that seems pretty bad, right? And so It feels to me like why are they creating these holes in the ocean? Again, like the idea that maybe you necessarily need to create some kind of cleansing to eventually create the source of energy that's going to like help protect your people. That would be an interesting reason for that. But do you think there's any like what do you think they're trying to accomplish by erasing islands
So when
besides just being, evil? They're not paying
yeah,
taxes, so
well,
we're gonna,
it's
erase them. Like
this is part of the problem, right, with these theories, is that they straight up say in the story that Lelouchia Kingdom was chosen not because like Saba was there and they're like, oh, we need to get rid of Saba, but because of its proximity to Mirajuaz. They're just like, this island is close to the Mirajuaz and we need to test out. It's like, so like that's literally why they wiped out Lelouchia. So I don't know.
What are you sure? Is that Alex, can you just
Alex, you could.
get us some can you get us some homework on that? I don't know if you know the chapter in that.
I'll see if I can find it.
If you can Google stuff like why Lelouchia Kingdom, or just Google Lelouchia Kingdom or why it was erased, I'm like 99% sure that it was literally just chosen because of its proximity to the Mirajuaz.
But continue. Yeah,
I
you're saying that's why
yeah
they
yeah
did
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I'm trying to remember what you asked me. Like, why are they taking these actions now, and like, what do
Yeah,
they hope
yeah.
to
Well,
accomplish?
for what reason are they erasing islands, other than just to be laughably evil? There has to be a reason that they say we're going to create these giant holes in the ground.
I guess the idea would be that if, you have Nika has just come back, the hero of their enemy has just returned, and it's like, if they live all the way up on the red line, right, and it's just like, he has all of these allies on the blue sea. If you're like, we need to protect our interests and ourselves, one way to do that is to get rid of like the land that they live on, so that they can't, defend them. You know what I mean? If they really are like trying to think of how to protect them, like that's one way I could r rationalize that.
Yeah, that
What
make
do you?
that that would make sense to me.
Yeah,
I
what do you
Alex, you
think?
get an answer for us? I see you coming
Yeah.
off mute there.
So in the panel, Emu says, "I wish to use Vegapunk's creation, the Mother Flame." And then Saturn responds, "Indeed, we will not know if it is real until it's tested." And there's some discussion on where to test it. And they say it's better to test it on forested land than the sea. And then Lelouchia Kingdom is identified. So it seems like you're right, Abraham. They just wanted a target to test their weapon.
That's crazy. Weren't they
All they
also
did.
rebelling though? I thought, didn't they also like have some kind of rebellion? I feel like they had, I
They
feel like there was
did.
some kind of, okay. So it wasn't
But
like, yeah.
that's not why though, like during that discussion that Alex was just quoting, they're not like, oh, because I don't care about like individual rebellions and these individual islands, like who's the king of Lelouchia, right? That wasn't the reason why. And also they would have killed the entire royal family by doing that anyway, right? So
It that is the whole in forested land is also interesting to me, right? Like that, like why does that matter that you're doing it on forested land?
I don't know. Maybe they just meant like doing it on an island rather than the sea or something like that, but
Yeah, well, again, right? Like there's, I mean, I know we're going to talk a little bit later about the sea potentially being a source of energy, about, maybe like if you try and put a giant hole in the sea, it like doesn't, if the hole wasn't an island before, like it won't make, like if you cut a, maybe put a hole in the sea, it doesn't make the sea levels rise the same amount because you just are, because you're not like displacing as much land, you're just like displacing more water, like the water comes back in or something. And so like maybe there's a reason they're trying to raise the sea levels.
yeah, I don't know. There could be. Well, what I give you my rationale, right? I can't really. Is there a particular reason why you think it might be important for them to raise sea levels?
Again, it just reminds me of the Full Metal Alchemist type thing, right? Where to actually,
Correct.
or even like if you take full metal, like Attack on Titan, right? Where at the end the rumbling is just like, you hit all the wall, the walls all just like become this giant, like massive titans, like wipe out half the Earth's population. I kind of like the idea of it being they have something that they need to accomplish that requires a massive sacrifice of life, and in order to actually do that, there's some kind of like
Okay.
slow and unending. Slow and steady path towards slow and steady path towards raising sea levels. Like again, when they say, hey,
Yeah.
we need the mother flame, that's something that the Elder Stars seem to find very important. They can't create another one.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like that's just so they can. It doesn't seem like the mother flame is something that exists just for them to do. Like they don't want that just to do a bunch of random evil things. They want it for some kind of objective that's yet to
Okay.
be announced. And so
Okay.
what it could be like raising the sea levels, it could be whatever, but like actually being able to create that, like
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Like, it's this whole idea that this is the mother flame at the end of the day is just an energy source, right? It's not the
right.
weapon itself, right? So it could be
And
that
so
they're
to act,
using this.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I got you.
Yeah, so just using some kind of method to actually try and create another mother flame or create another source of energy that they don't have, that they don't have the ability to create otherwise.
Okay.
Or at the very least, they need that source of energy to be able to accomplish whatever their larger goal is that we don't really at this point know anything about.
Yeah, no, I mean that makes sense to me. I at the end of the day, I don't. Like, these are all interesting conversations, and I would not be mad at the story at all if this is the road that we went down. Like, if it was, if let's say there were people in the One Piece world who are like, hey, I stand the world gov, I think what they're doing is right, kind of. Depending on how we got there, I wouldn't be mad about it. I just don't expect that to be what we get from the story, right?
That's true. But like you said, it's an interesting conversation. Some might say
Yeah.
that I'm out here creating S-class theories on the fly. Some might say, I'm doing that.
Yeah, we bounce, yeah, bounce ideas off of each other. Some of these ideas end up hitting a little bit.
That's what I'm saying, man. The ideas end up hitting and we come up with them on the fly. But time to, I think, show you all some that have not been created on the fly when it's time for S class versus F class, the segment with,
Real quick, real quick, we should be doing our predictions for the next chapter, right? Because we didn't do that
Oh
last week.
man. God dang, man. We didn't even put that in the pre-show, man. We spent a whole hour in this darn pre-show. We didn't even talk about the predictions. Yeah, man. What do you think is gonna happen in 11:15?
Yeah, I think that it's I'm gonna go with the ancient robot is no, because we're about to I was gonna say something about the ancient robot. You know what? I'm gonna say that we learn about how the ancient robot and Zunisha and all of these people may have let down Joy Boy, like why everyone is so apologetic.
I think that would be interesting. I wonder if we're gonna. I think that we might be a couple chapters from that. I feel like the Vegapunk
Probably.
flashback is definitely going to be long, and there's just gonna be continued lore drop. But I think that probably we're gonna be in a Joy Boy flashback and learning a lot more about. We might, if we get an actual flashback and get to actually see some of the ancient kingdom, that'd be pretty cool. I think one thing that's interesting that we didn't actually get into, is it seems to be implied that Nika, the Elbaf sun god, and Joy Boy are actually different people in the way that Vegapunk talked about them in the last chapter. And I think we're gonna get some kind of explanation. Like I'll make this my official prediction about who Joy Boy was and who Nika is and exactly what the two of their relationships are, or at the very least how Joy Boy or how Nika inspired Joy Boy and the person that he wanted to be.
Okay. I like it.
All right, man. Well, now it's time for S class versus F class, the segment where Abraham and I find theories in the internet and rate them so you don't have to. Alex, what do we got today?
We're going to keep with the trend. Our first theory is from Mr. Morge, as put up by his number one fan, Abraham. He's talking about the mother flame and the source of energy. It's identified a central conflict in the story of One Piece is inequality. Vegapunk's ultimate dream appears to be the creation of peace by providing a free and limitless energy source for the world that would eliminate this disparity. According to this theory by Mr. Morge, the Mother Flame is not the ultimate energy source that Vegapunk has been striving to develop. Instead, there is another true ancient energy source. This ancient energy source is the key to powering the ancient giant and resolving the world's disparity. And it was discovered by Joy Boy and his crew. However, as Joy Boy was defeated before he could share this knowledge with the world, this is the reason for the apology he wrote to the fishman.
Yeah, man, I love this theory, to be honest with you. I think this is an S-class theory for sure. I think there's some stuff in one of the next theories we're gonna get into that are kind of related to this. So I don't wanna spoil some of our next conversation, but one of the things that I really like about this is the idea that Vegapunk is creating a separate thing, like that he's essentially modeled the thing that he's trying to create off of the ultimate source of energy that he's trying to develop. And we don't really know exactly to this point how successful he's actually been. But, you know, when we see like the number like S281 or whatever on the Mother Flame, it's like there have been many, many, many iterations of this that keep getting closer to maybe what the pure thing is. And at the very end, we're going to find out what the like one of the eventual see things that we're going to find out through the course of this flashback is exactly what the source of energy that could be an ultimate source of energy for the world is.
So I like had actually more mixed feelings when I first like clicked on the video and started listening. But what also I'll tell you what what I would not like if this was the answer, right? If the answer to what this limitless energy source was something intangible, again, like I'm not a huge fan of that idea. I've said this on the podcast a couple times, right? I do want this to be like some kind of real energy source, not just like inspiration or whatever it is, right?
Sure.
And the title of the video was like, you know, the it was something like the mother flame is the will of D or something like that. So I was when I first clicked on it, I was like, oh man, I feel like I'm not really gonna like this video. But I did learn I had been working under the assumption that the mother flame was this limitless energy source that Vegapunk was trying to create, but it really does seem like there's something there that he has fallen short in terms of like discovering what this truly is, right? Because one, it can't be limitless if the world government is constantly running out of like if they're worried about running out of like the supply of like mother flames, right? If they can be used up, then they're clearly it's clearly not a limitless resource. And two, he kind of talks about it in when he's talking about his dreams, he's like, the closer and closer I came to discovering this ancient energy source, you know, the closer I learned about like what powered this ancient robot and whatnot. So there's a lot of suggestions that he actually hasn't gotten to that point where he was able to accomplish his ultimate goal, right? So I love the idea that there is a pure, like a true pure energy source that we will get into and find out about later in the series. I just really hope that it's not something intangible.
That is one of the interesting things, right? When Vegapunk talks about how people's dreams are the source of energy for the entire world, right? It feels to me like there's something that has to do with, it feels to me like there is something that might have to do with like the nature, like what, you know, almost like what are humans in this world? You know, it like in what like how is will passed down, even like what is haki, like how the heck are there these like actual physical manifestations of will? I think it's clear that at the very least, there's going to be some kind of tangible aspect to it. It's not just going to be as abstract as a bunch of, it's not going to be as abstract as just there's a bunch of dreams, but that is something that I would like to see fleshed out and explained, whether it is about explaining who humans are, explaining how this will is passed down through devil fruits, that I think would work really nicely hand in hand with the idea of. I think it would work really nicely hand in hand just thematically with the idea of dreams powering the world and the more tangible source of energy that we have in the
Yeah.
Mother Flame, Eternal Flame, etc.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I think we're more or less on the same page with this. I would call this an S-class theory as well. So I think we should move on to the next one.
Sure. We got Jordan's man, Euteron, coming in with
My
a
dog.
pretty scientific explanation for what the true source of energy might be. So he says that the secret to the mother flame is nuclear fusion, which allows for the creation of hydrogen flames by splitting water molecules, H2O. This is why the mother flame is able to exist in a tank of water. And Euteron posits that the sea is an endless source of water, thus is the ultimate source of energy Vegapunk is searching for. Abraham, what are your thoughts?
So I've never heard of a hydrogen flame before. I guess is the I guess the idea is kind of like, oh, you know, instead of using stuff like oil and electricity or whatever for energy, if you could just get energy from the sea itself, that would essentially be like a limitless energy source, and the mother flame is gonna allow us to do that.
Yeah,
This is
exactly.
how
And
I'm
I'll ask you real quick,
understanding
have
it.
you ever heard of the Hindenburg?
Yeah, in Germany or something like that.
Yeah. Then you've heard of hydrogen flames. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, wait, what?
The blimp, you know, the blimp.
Oh, okay.
Clearly you're not an Archer fan because it's a
No.
there's an Archer episode where there's like a huge gag about how now the blimps are helium, which are non-flammable, but for hydrogen is flammable, and so like the Hindenburg, which is a giant blimp explosion, was a giant disaster because of the large hydrogen explosion from within the blimp, the thing that
Okay.
was, you know, making the blimp float.
Look, it's a, I mean, it's a it's a very creative theory. I just, so, how do I put this?
What, so
The
one layer I'll add
yeah.
on top, Abraham,
Yeah,
for your consideration, is that
sure.
the sea in One Piece is a lot different than water in our world. Like it's responsible for sea prism stones. The devil fruit eaters aren't able to swim in the sea, so there could be more to this than just a purely physical real world perspective.
Look, I like the sea is vast and seemingly endless, and you know, going back to like maybe the what we were talking about earlier, maybe the world government is trying to raise the sea levels so there's more ocean and more energy for people to use, if you want to use that as a rationale for why they might
You
not let
could.
you. It feels like a big stretch to me. And so I don't think I can call it an S class. And since I can't call it an S class, it clearly has to be an F class theory. But you can try and change my mind. My mind, I'm
Yeah,
open to changing my mind if you can
I'm
convince
gonna
me.
tell you why this is an S-class theory. Because once again, it's not necessarily about just exactly is this more or less likely to happen, but about what it could potentially open the door for in the story. The
Okay.
first thing is, I think Alex came in with a point that is exactly how I feel. I think that's completely spot on. Is that what we have about the sea in this world is like devil fruit users go into it and lose all of their energy. It seems to have some sort of significance beyond just being able to. Beyond just being a body of water for people who have some certain special kind of power. As we learn more about the science behind where those powers potentially come from, and if we understand that the sea is one of is water and the sea is actually one of the things that is the source of some of the source of energy in the world, it would be easy to draw some kind of scientific conclusion or connection between why people who have this sort of power, when they go underwater, actually lose some of that energy. It would be easy to, at the very least, create some kind of explanation for Oda that makes sense. I think beyond that, what we see with the mother flame is fire underwater. That, you know, that does not make sense. And like, there should not be fire underwater. And I think having, you know, the idea that you're going to be able to create some sort of perpetual fire using the actual elements that are in water, that we like know H2O has a lot of hydrogen, you're able to actually perpetually create energy from that, it would allow you to imagine, like, the scientific process for that would be something that we know creates fire and is sort of like related to nuclear energy at the very least, right? Like, you know, I watched this video in Japanese, so nuclear fusion, fission, like whatever it is. My Japanese is pretty good. I don't know all these scientific terms, but I think nuclear fusion was about right. And I think the final piece is understanding, especially for someone who is Japanese, having a source of energy that is endless but also creates some kind of potential evil side to it, being something related to nuclear energy, is also something that would be that would be really thematically compelling about how Vegapunk flew too close to the sun and creating something that could be used for good and also could be used for evil.
Yeah. I mean, look, I get all that. Those are all great points. I don't know enough physics to be like, this, you know, I feel like with nuclear fusion or fission or whatever, you need, you know, radioactive elements. But like, I'm going to try and ignore like the scientific realism stuff of it, because I feel like Oda can play loose with that kind of stuff. You know,
yes,
he doesn't really,
yeah.
he doesn't
you
know.
You can't
physics.
Put, you can't make
yeah.
fire underwater in real life.
yeah, you know, I just, the mother flame, the sea as an energy source just feels, it feels wrong to me at the end of the day, because like, so with the water levels rising, you know, that feels like, you know, this is like some impending doom. Like you mentioned that maybe the One Piece world in the past, you know, the water levels were much lower and like there were a bunch of continents and, you know, maybe like there were things that were changed in order to like allow the world government to like overthrow the ancient kingdom. I have a hard time getting around the idea that the endless sea around us is going to be the solution to all of these problems about like energy and what.
I mean,
I don't
I'm
know.
Not
I just,
necessarily, yeah, I'm not
I,
necessarily
I think,
suggesting that
yeah.
the sea is going to be the solution to all of the bad things happening.
Sure.
I'm suggesting that one, the harnessing of the sea's energy is the sort of thing that could be responsible for a lot of the bad things that are happening, or potentially used for some of the good things that are happening. But what we see is that the sea has a real effect on people beyond just being a body of water. And this could give us some kind of explanation for why it's important, beyond just being something that all these pirate ships are floating around on, in addition to being something that gives us like, hey, the mother flame is like why there's a fire in a tank of water, not something that scientifically makes sense.
I'll give it an S class. That's fine. I don't love the theory. I don't think I rock with it, but like you did that's a solid argument.
Thank you, Grandma. Alex, what's next?
Yeah, the next one comes from my wife. She was listening to the pod doing some theorizing and
shout out Katie, we love you.
Oh yeah. She rated you guys 5 stars, by the way.
Oh wow.
Thank you. Now someone else who's listening, rate us 5 stars, please. We want
that's
another
objectively
one, someone we don't know. We love you.
Yeah. That's objective feedback. This is a five-star podcast. There's no conflict of interest there.
No, not at all. She would give you honest feedback for sure. Anyway, she had a question about why the world government is so fearful of the Gomu Gomu no Mi in particular, when we've seen so many awakened devil fruits that have the power to shape the world. She identifies Vegapunk's line about having flown too close to the sun and his ability to create Zoan fruit copies as a hint. We've seen Luffy and his sun god Nika form provide power to the giant robot. Therefore, the mother flame is quite possibly derived from Nika and the drums of liberation and eternal flame, which we're identifying as the true source of power, might be one and the same. A quick side note, too, she points out that Luffy's hair is very reminiscent of the mother flame now that we've seen it in its tank. Jordan, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, man, I honestly love this theory. I gotta give this an immediate, you know, an immediate S class. The first thing is I want to say I also noticed that Luffy's hair really felt like it looked like the mother flame.
Bro, and just so, give it, like, you can just give it to her. You know, this is Katie's flower. It's not Jordan's.
Hold on. In the pre-show, I said to you that it reminded that his hair reminded me of the mother flame. And then Alex brought on, oh, Katie also said that. So I'm gonna say me and Katie are on the same wavelength with that. But I think that was one of the things that I was wondering about is, you know, why exactly does Luffy's, you know, hair that's, you know, burning or flowing or whatever actually look just like this flame? And I think that another question I've also had is why is Luffy powering the giant robot? So I think the idea that this sun god character we have is tapping into the similar source of energy, or even being the source of energy that the mother flame is trying to be like, is really cool. I think additionally, I really like the parallelism between zone fruits and smile fruits, or like the actual zone fruits and smile fruits, and saying, okay, Vegapunk tried to make a perfect version of the eternal of the devil fruits, and he ended up making a false version. It's funny. I'm actually thinking of the word in Japanese. Itsuwari no version, but you know, I'm like a fake version. The same kind of thing where he's like trying to create the eternal flame, and he's ended up creating a version that is, you know, very similar in for all intents and purposes, but still a failure in some way. So I got to give it an S class for that reason.
Yeah, no, I love Katie was in her bag when she was cooking this up. Like, she cooked. I love this theory. This is definitely an S-class theory, I think. I wouldn't read too much into, like, flew too close to the sun, in my opinion. I just, you know, I think that's just, like, an expression that's used. But, you know, it could be, like, a double entendre kind of thing. But everything else about this theory, I love. The fact that they're like we talked about with the Morge theory, that the mother flame doesn't appear to be like it appears to be an imperfect version of this energy source that this true ancient energy source. And like, you know, like you guys said, Luffy's hair resembles the mother flame, and with the giant robot is respond, it all fits. And we have had, you know, some connection between Luffy and the giant robot and whatnot. My only question would be, what is it about the Nika fruit that is, you know, that is this energy source? Is it just like, you know, his charisma or something like that? Who knows? I'm sure we'll get
into that. Look at this man making that face when he's thinking about it, the charisma. He's like, is it just the charisma?
No, I didn't make any kind of face. You're reading too. Come on. I told you, this is an amazing theory. I just, we'll wait and see what that energy source actually takes the form of. But I think this is, I couldn't agree more with what she cooked up. This is a phenomenal theory.
Yeah, and I think the one thing I had to, you know, point out, because we've got to get into the actual drum piece, I kind of like the idea of, you know, maybe it's like the crackling of the fire, right, is what causes the sound of the drums. Or at the very least, you know, in Skypiea, when we first saw Luffy doing the Nika dance in the panel that Oda has identified as one of his favorite in the whole series, it might be that you know, that's when we first heard people playing that rhythm on the drums, right? Was when people were standing outside of a giant flame dancing around. And so to me,
Yeah.
thematically, it makes sense. Historically, it makes sense. I don't know that I think it's going to be exactly that he is the eternal flame, but I definitely think that there's going to be some real kind of connection between the powers that he has, the idea of the sun being an unending flame, and what the source of energy that Vegapunk's been looking to harness is.
All
I've
right.
got, I did a quick Google just to kind of maybe tie the Euteron theory and this theory together. And you might be aware, but in the sun's core, protons from hydrogen atoms collide and fuse to create helium, releasing a huge amount of energy. Do you think, you know, you were talking earlier about how you'd rather have this energy source be something more concrete. Is that satisfying? Does that tie the two together?
It could be. It's funny because I don't have a solid idea for what I want, right? I would be perfectly satisfied with like an explanation similar to something like that. I think the only thing that I would not be a fan of would just be something like, you know, be like, you know how Bello Betty can hype people up with her devil fruit or whatnot, like where it's just something like, you know, the motivation that you get from being around this guy is like, yeah, I think that's the only thing that I wouldn't be the biggest fan of. But however Oda wants to explain it scientifically or whatnot, you know, I'll leave that up to him. I'm not an author, you know. I don't know how to hook up a good story.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool, right? It's like pretty similar to the Euteron theory, right? Where it's, you know, you have some kind of fusion of atoms or something. Like I didn't get the exact details from what, like release of helium or, you know, but like that kind of the protons hitting into each other, but having some kind of molecular activity happening that creates some kind of element that produces energy, I think would be like a pretty cool explanation for all of this. So to
Yeah.
me, absolutely S-class theory.
For sure. Well, now it's time for One Piece Would You Rathers, a new segment where we answer hypotheticals as if we're in the One Piece world. What do we got, Alex?
Yeah, we've got a new one this week. Not another FMK. We've
Okay.
seen quite a few tyrannical rulers over the course of the One Piece story, and in this week's Would You Rather, I'd like to ask you both, which society would you most prefer to be born into? Dressrosa under Doflamingo, Wano under Kaido Orochi, or Alabasta under Crocodile? Abraham, I want to kick it over to you.
Yeah, I feel like there's a pretty clear right answer, and it has to be Doflamingo and Dressrosa. Like, again, here's an assumption I'm gonna be making, right? Because the vast majority of the citizens on Dressrosa, they don't know the shit that's going on behind the scenes. They don't know that they're like your loved ones. Sure, your loved ones disappear, but it's like, you know, it's not like you remember that they're gone. These people go about their days happy. You know, the country is prosperous, whereas one in Wano, you're born into Wano, you're most likely going to be poor and starving. And if you're born into Alabasta, you're one, you live in a desert, you know, people live in, there's no water, and then also like a massive war going on. Like, you know, I feel like it's clearly going to have to be Dressrosa.
You know, I think it kind of depends if you are in Dressrosa as a toy or if you are in Dressrosa as a regular person. Because
Yeah.
you're right that, like, if you're in Dressrosa as a regular person, like, it's honestly kind of cool. Like, you're
Yeah.
having a pretty good time. You know, you think you're in just like this perfectly prosperous kingdom. Honestly, in my recollection, this is one of the arcs that I don't own all of in manga form, so I'm not as, you know, well read on it, but in my recollection, a lot of people who were there, like, they love Dofi at the beginning of the story, right? Like, they don't even understand that he's evil in the same way that they
Yeah.
understand that. I mean, too, I guess they actually like Crocodile too, but like, they like Crocodile because they're suffering and think that he's a hero and someone like, you know, Kaido and Orochi, it's just a little bit more, that one's a little bit fuzzier. But I definitely think that, like, it's like my grandpa used to say, right? You say, you know, there was a hypothetical in the New York Times a while ago, and it would say, would you rather be, you know, always grow old and always be able to have the body of a 30-year-old, or always be able to have the brain of a 30-year-old? And my grandpa would say, well, if you're demented, you don't even know. I take the body every time. Look, if you're demented, you don't even know you don't know anything. So there's no problem. It's the same thing, right? If you don't even know. But I think another question, though, is who would you rather be in, Wano or Alabasta? Between those two, which one would you least rather be in?
He, okay, so is this Alabasta in the middle of the war or Alabasta now?
No, I definitely like under Crocodile, right? Under Crocodile.
Okay. I think actually, honestly, it's probably still Alabasta because, man, people in Wano were killing their children because they couldn't feed them.
Dang,
Like,
bro, did I miss that? They were killing their children?
you, yeah, there
They're
was
eating
like
their own
pictures of
kids?
like a mom in tears with like a like holding her because like they couldn't
Dang,
afford to like,
bro.
yeah, with
I gotta
man.
reread Wano, but it's like 20% of
And
the
then
whole
also, you
thing.
know, there's all the people who were force fed like smile fruits and stuff
Yeah,
like that.
yeah.
And now they can't even like, you know, express emotion. Like,
Well, how about this? I think it's more compelling to maybe talk about some of the citizens in Wano that didn't experience the worst of
okay.
Kaido's reign, and more
Yeah.
so you have to abide by that when you're
Okay.
living maybe a more luxurious lifestyle. Because obviously
Gotcha.
you
So
don't
you're.
live in poverty, right? That's just.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're like in the flower capital then instead.
Exactly.
Okay.
Man,
In
if
that.
I'm the flower, we're in the flower capital, it's cool. You know, you got
Yeah.
Kamurasaki, like we're chilling. But that's you know, it's like, oh, if you're in, I mean, to be, but that's also true for like, you know, Alabasta, right? Like you have people in a casino chilling in rain dinners. Like just because you had Tanta, was that not Tanta's our first guy? Toe Tog, Kozo's dad. Kozo's dad
Oh
is out here
yeah.
trying to dig
Yeah.
up water over and over and just getting like totally wrecked.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of a drought, but you're not hungry, and then you still got rich people in the kingdom who are still able to eat, right? Like if you were in Vivi's family, you still are have be able to have feasts if you need to. So like I think in all of these kingdoms, you have people who are wealthy and able to actually get on.
Yeah, I think the flower cap. I'd rather be in the flower capital than in like, you know, a well-off person in Alabasta though, because I think at the end of the day, you know, like those people in the flower capital, they lived a good life. You know, they were rich, they had all the food they wanted, all that stuff,
Right.
right? Whereas
Right.
I feel like everyone in Alabasta was thirsty. Like there was just no water in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right, but I think if you're poor, you would rather be in Alabasta because,
Yeah,
right,
no, I agree. I agree.
like
I
you'd rather,
100%.
like, you know, Toto, that was his name, by the way. You know, he might have been real skinny, but you know, like this man would just live in the desert, digging up holes, you know,
100%.
like digging up holes like Shia LaBeouf in 2000, you know, four,
Yeah.
or whatever year that was.
Stanley Yelnats.
Stanley Yelnats. But for the regular people being a little bit of a drought, but still kind of in like a mildly thriving city and like believing that Crocodile is your savior is pretty cool. Whereas if you're one of the poor people who are in Wano, I don't even know they were eating their own kids. Now, the smile thing, I'm like,
I'm not
I don't
eating
know if
them,
that's
not
cool.
eating them. They were just killing them so that they didn't have to like die by like starvation.
Okay, still sad. Still sad. I
Yeah.
mean, and listen, if you are killing your kids after that by starvation, like you definitely eating your kids off screen. If your children are like, if you're like, I have to ch kill my kids, so our whole family can eat. Like, there's a natural logic to this because
You
you're
can't
so
afford to
hungry.
be picky.
Right, that's what
You
I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like you definitely need to make sure that the family can eat and there's a source of meat right in front of you. But I would say we're clear at this point. Dressrosa is the best place to
Yeah.
live because they don't even know they have a problem. If you're rich, Wano is the next best, and then Alabasta. And if you're poor, you'd rather live in Alabasta and then Wano.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with that completely.
Look at us being in agreement today, man. Look at us being in
Yes.
agreement.
Yeah, in lockstep.
In lockstep, one on one, that's rare and it doesn't happen, but we're glad that it happened. And I'll say, you know, I think that in the part of the reason that last episode did so well is because we were really, you know, we were coming into some lockstep. You know, it was you came to understand, you know, you were able to express, you know, that maybe me making crack dealer jokes, you know, saying you were on crack, you know, hurt a little bit. And I was able to, you know, I was able to be big enough to remind you that I never called you, said you were on crack or anything. It was just your crack dealer calling me. And that,
It
and
was
everyone
justified.
appreciated. Oh, it was his crack dealer calling me. I never said anything. It wasn't my fault. His crack dealer
Man.
calling me. Oh,
Thanks.
man. I'm just kidding. We came to a nice understanding on that, but it's time to move on to the culture. And we're still a little bit on One Piece today. Fortunately, you know, we have some news about the live action One Piece. According to Jacob Robinson of What's on Netflix, casting calls are out for season two of the live action, which gives us an idea of who's going to be in the second season of the One Piece live action, as well as what they're going to look like. The casting calls generally just give the race of the person we're looking for. So we have Vivi is a Northern African casting call. Robin is Latina. Smoker is a white character. Tashigi is going to be Asian. Miss Valentine, don't even remember which one that is going to be white. Mr. Five, he's the Afro dude with the bombs, is going to be black. And Crocus is anyone. Abraham,
Yeah.
what's your reaction to these casting calls?
I actually thought they were all great. Like, especially the Crocus one, because Crocus, he's just an old dude. He's just an old wise man, and I feel like you
He's just
could
an
cast
old
him,
dude.
you could cast him as a black dude, you could cast him as an old white dude, Asian dude. Like, so I love that that one was just open to anyone. And honestly, I'm on board with I like the casting decisions, right? Mr. Five should be black. I think
He's gonna
Robin,
be pretty
maybe you could
swaggy.
argue, I think maybe you could argue Robin is like maybe not Latina or something like that, but like I feel like she gives Latina vibes, so you know.
I mean, all her powers are like dos flores, you know, like all her powers are in Spanish. And
That's true. I forgot about that.
The thing, I'm not gonna lie, I texted our friend Joaquin when he, you know, he posted something in the Discord. I said, I gotta text him offline on this one. I sent him Ro Latina Robin with the, you know, hot sweaty face emoji. And he texted me back right away, 100%, bro. That was one of the first things to jump off the screen to me. Bro, hey, have you been to like Puerto Rico before?
No.
Dog, it was crazy. Like I was just walking down the street and I was like, how is every single woman here? I was like, I need to keep, I was on a run and I went by the beach. I need to keep my eyes straight forward so I don't end up in a fight with some girl's boyfriend.
Man.
That Nico
Yeah.
Robin being a Latina, I'm very excited for that decision.
Okay. I see. I mean, I wouldn't have thought Latino was your preference. I thought you had a little bit of an Asian fetish, to be honest. But like
In the words, in the immortal words of Ray Swimmer, I ain't got no type. Bad women is the only thing that I like, except for older women. I do like older. I really do. I think that one's the thing that you can really kind of get on me for sure. But there's definitely some bad Latinas out there. The other thing I'm
Oh,
really excited
for
about is
sure.
Vivi. Yes. The other thing I'm excited about is Vivi being a Northern African. I think one of the things about the live action that I think is pretty cool is you know, what we saw in East Blue is there's just like a million different characters from random places and they all seem to have British accents, or like randomly Garp has a Scottish accent, which is kind of weird. But like, you know, you have like black characters, you have like white, whatever. And I think as we start entering the Grand Line, I'd really like to see the locations that we visit actually having some kind of cultural character. And this is an opportunity to say, yeah, Alabasta's, you know, Arab desert country, and we're gonna have like a Northern African princess, and it'd be pretty cool to actually go there and see like a Northern African society, potentially then go to Drum Island and have like Eastern European, you know, go to Fishman, I mean Fishman Islands, you know, be very culturally African, black, whatever, you know.
Yeah, no, I
I
mean
think that would be pretty special.
LMS is straight up Egypt, right? You know, you have like
Right.
between all of the, like, there's a lot, like, between Chaka and Pel, and just like the layout of the country, it's a desert. Like, yeah, I think the North African call is a solid choice.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
I again.
it's specifically too, just being able to see the culture of each place. Like, I want to move through the world and have it feel like it's a real world, not just like an amalgam of everywhere you go, there's just like a million different races and there's not like a personality to it.
No, I think these casting decisions were all on point. Like, I have no qualms with any of them.
Amazing. Well, I'm glad we're on the same page there. Abraham, I heard you have a funny story to tell us about your life.
Yeah. Some crazy, crazy shit happened to me last week. So I'm usually the last person in lab to leave each night. Cause like one of my lab mates as a kid, so you know, he usually goes home kind of early. Yeah. He's, for whatever reason, you know. I usually by 6, 7 o'clock, I'm the only person left there. And we have this janitor that, the same janitor who always cleans like our lab space and whatnot. And the two of us actually have like a pretty good relationship because he's this older black dude. He's like maybe in his 60s, 70s kind of thing. And, you know, whenever he comes around, he's always telling me, he's like, man, you know, you make my day when I see you. Like, I'm so proud of what you're doing, that kind of stuff. Right. It's like a very wholesome relationship. His name is his. Yeah, I don't need to say his name necessarily, but yeah. So, you know, we get along really, really well. And then last week, I think last Tuesday, I'm walking back into the lab, and he looks like he's having some trouble getting his words out. He's like, Abraham, What do you think of like our relationship? It's like, man, I got a lot of love for you, Russ. You know, you're, you know, great friend, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I'm thinking this is some kind of like, you know, uncle nephew relationship, even though I don't actually like, I don't know him well enough for that. But like, that's the vibe of the relationship. And he basically then goes and says like, well, I mean, how about like sexually? I'm like, taking a what? And he basically was asking me if I would be interested in pursuing a romantic relationship with him. And one, I was like, Russ, I'm sorry, I'm not gay. Like, I don't swing that way. You know, I'm sure you're, you know, but also in my head, I was just like, I was also like, I don't think of you that way, man. Bro, he's old enough to be my grandfather, if not my dad. I was just shocked, you know. And here's the crazy thing as well. Another crazy thing. So, you know, leading up to this, like for like the last couple months and whatnot, you know how you greet friends with like a hug and whatnot. Like, that's how like we would say hello to each other and whatnot, right?
Right,
all of
right,
those
right.
hugs took on like a completely different meaning the moment this
was
said. And I was just like, yeah. So that's what happened to me last week. So I had a 70-year-old dude come on to me.
Yeah, man, you know, it's I feel like it's one of those things where the age is not, That's not the story to me, you know. I'm like I just said, you know, I was like, man, you know what? I see why Abraham had to bring this to me, because I just talked about how older is my type, and I'm like, dang, like, would I see? Am I past a 70-year-old woman? Like, I don't know. I don't think so.
Man,
like, you know, let me tell you though, because there's one thing that I really love about older women, right? It's
okay,
and that's they have no fear. It's, you get to a certain point and you're just like, I don't want to deal with any of these games. I just want to have sex. Like, I want to do that. The games can be whatever. It's like, we just gonna talk for a little bit. And that's really what I hear in in your man over there saying, you know what? Like, hey, I got this young man. He's very handsome.
Straight to it.
Very handsome who shows up, shows up here. We have a nice relationship. You know, we hug. I said, you know, this man's not going to waste his time with any roundabouts. He's going to let you know what's up and say, hey, we'll see what it is. And if it happens, it's going to happen. And if not, I guess we're just going to be a little awkward for a second and we're going to get back to it.
He shot his shot. I see him Monday through Friday every single day because it's not like he's not clean. And, you know, he didn't do anything wrong necessarily, you know, asking someone out.
No,
right? It's not
no,
like
no.
he tried to like force himself onto me or anything like that. It was just kind of like, one, I guess he just like assumed I was gay or something like that. I was just like,
well, it's like I said, man, the older you are, man, the more you just shoot that shot. Like, you know, he don't really care. It's like you get to 70, right? You have a grandma, right? Like, mm-hmm. How much does your grandma care about what other people think with her?
Yeah, well, my grandma's, all my grandparents are actually dead now.
How much did, I mean, me too, but like, you know, how much did they care when they got to a certain age about what people thought?
You know, not that much.
It's like, you know, grandparents, they're going to do their thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's, to me, even now, right? Like, you know, when I broke up with my girlfriend, I got a much different reaction from, people my age who are younger to people who are like 50, who I talk about it. And they're like, you know, you'll be fine. You'll get over it, whatever. And then even like, you know, I sit in a coffee shop for my Japanese conversation. I hear young people talk about romance and it's just like the craziest stuff about this. So idealistic about love and everything. And then you realize like when you get to 70, it's like, you've been through that. You see a young person. It's like nothing this young person could say could really make me like, is there anything like a 17-year-old could say that could really embarrass you?
I feel like, yeah, I feel like they could.
A 12-year-old, could a 12-year, like a 12-year-old, you don't really, could they really say anything that could embarrass you? You know, you'd be like, whatever, you're 12.
Old people,
he's like, listen, the worst thing that he could say, like, he's not going to do anything. Like, this dude, like, he's going to shoot his shot, and he knows he's going to be just fine. And he's like, hey, I just got to ask this young man if he want to have sex with me. And if not, I'm going to go on about my day. And if the best case scenario, I'm having sex with this young man.
One of the craziest things is that this is the second time in the last, like, year and a half that I've had an older gay man come on to me in that way.
Wow, I mean, you know, man, listen, and you must be doing something right then. That's what I say. You must be doing something right.
The story gets better though. Okay. So me, Alex, Samir, like we're hanging out with a couple friends last Friday. And I told them this story about the janitor, right?
Right.
And then
right.
I mentioned that another gay guy had come on to me before. And it's actually like our friend Luigi that we have. Right.
Okay.
And I didn't say it at first because I was like, you know, basically what had happened is we had been on a float trip, the whole squad, and he had drank a lot and whatnot, and he basically asked me if I was gay, right? And
right,
I'm like,
right.
And I just told him like, yeah, no, I'm sorry, Luigi, I'm not. Blah blah blah. We moved on, right? And like he actually like sent me.
Well, how old is he?
36 or 37?
Man, they're not even older, bro. Go on.
Well, older than me. Yeah, when I say older, I meant older than me.
Hey, hold on. I told someone the other day, I was like, oh, I like older women. They're like, what? Yeah. I was telling a story about an older woman, how I got my bike. And they're like, oh, how old? Like 35? I was like, that's not even older for me. That's just like we're the same age. But go on.
The story gets better, right? So I don't say his name to kind of like protect his identity during all of this, right? But everyone at the table is like looking at me and they're like, is this someone other than Luigi? And I'm like, wait, what? I was like, yeah, it was Luigi. They're like, yeah, we all knew. I was like, what do you mean you all knew? They go,
that's
like, Abraham. the first time that you came on one of these board game trips with us like 3 years ago, Luigi was all over you. He was flirting with you like crazy. He
That's
was
so
like
funny.
Really, really into you. And I was like, bro, I didn't notice this for like the last, like, how I was like, how am I the last person to notice that this guy is like making a move on me? You know, everyone else, I was like, everyone else knew. And my ignorant ass is sitting here completely oblivious to all of this.
Yeah, man. Hey, all I can say is, you know, as someone who's been hit on by a number of gay men over the years, it was very flattering. I'm very thankful. You know, I generally turn it down, but I said thank you for your interest. I'm glad that you find me handsome and maybe like my butt. So that's what I got.
I don't know. I took it as a compliment. Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But on that note, I think that's all we have for time. Thank you to all of these men for raising Abraham's self-esteem, just like everyone who watches our YouTube videos that have his face on it at YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece. Thanks to Alex, your friend who produced this podcast, for helping out behind the scenes. And come back next Sunday to hear what we've got to say about chapter 1115. In the meantime, we are your Friends Who Read One Piece. In addition to YouTube, go ahead and like our podcast on Spotify, share, give us 5 cards, and help us get more friends. Also, we have a Twitter now, so follow us on Twitter at FWROPpod for hilarious One Piece content from our friend Joaquin and new episode notifications. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Take care.